Hey there, this is Bram Kanstein, and you're listening to Bitcoin for Millennials. Together with my guests on this podcast, I go on a journey to discover how our current financial system works, why it's flawed, and why Bitcoin is the most relevant technology that you should understand and adopt. In this episode, I'm joined by Julian Linegar. He's the CEO and co-founder of the Swiss Bitcoin-only platform Relay. After a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in business administration, he worked in banking and management consulting. And after that, he co-founded several companies, including Switzerland's leading blockchain training course for the financial industry. As Relay is one of the biggest European on-ramps to Bitcoin, I'm excited to talk with him today and talk about the future of Bitcoin in Europe and beyond. So welcome, Julian.
Wow, let's go. Bram, thank you very much for this invitation. Really looking forward to having this conversation.
Yeah, awesome to talk to a fellow European Bitcoiner. I mean, there are a lot, but I haven't talked to that many on the podcast yet. And of course, you're based in Switzerland, which has a certain also history in the financial world. So super interested to explore that too. But first question, I saw you were born in 93.
92. There's a lot of misinformation. Lately, there was an article in a Swiss newspaper that said I'm 29. I'm actually 31, and I was born in 1992.
Okay, so 92, but still a late millennial then, right?
Yeah.
How do you experience explaining Bitcoin to our generational peers?
I do definitely identify as a millennial. I mean, many people also tell me you look very young. I know I look very young because I'm into Bitcoin for almost 10 years. This keeps me young. And I also feel like I'm 20, you know. So I think my lifestyle is not really the one from a beginning 30-year-old. It's more like a 20-year-old. And it's fun. And definitely, I am a millennial. I feel like a millennial. And I love this generation. I think it's the most important generation. It is the generation that is already the biggest consumer. We are the biggest consumers in the world.
Yeah.
And then in the next 10 years, we will be the biggest investors in the world because we will inherit a lot of money. We will make a lot of money. We will control a lot of money through being in executive positions at financial institutions, etc. And that's why I think it is so important to explain our generation, the millennials, what money is and what Bitcoin is, what good investments are, etc. And I think it's not done efficiently through like the education system or whatever public information people get. It's, I think, really important to create this mindset and to continuously educate yourself about finances and including Bitcoin, obviously. And so how I explain Bitcoin to this generation is really this is our number one chance to fix the financial system. This is one of the most exciting investments of our century, and it has really the potential to profoundly change how the world and our society and our economic and financial system works. So it's a huge opportunity that we should not miss as a generation.
Yeah. So how do you experience it when you talk about that? Like I have the same as in, you know, we never got taught this in school, you know, what is money and, or about personal finance and finance as a whole, actually. So like my experience is that once you say this, what you just said, and the question will pop up like, what is wrong with our current system? You know, because especially in the Western world, you know, it just works. Well, in your country, it works even better, you know. So how do you view that? Like, how do we get people to see, or what are your angles to talk about when you talk about like what is wrong?
I mean, the first reaction usually is you are totally nuts. Like, what is wrong with you? And that's fine. We're still so early, you know, and we as Bitcoiners, we sometimes also should be a bit reflective of this and like, you know, not take us too seriously because we are super early. And whenever you're super early to something, you're also viewed as a bit of a freak, as a bit of an outsider. And that's fine. So I just enjoy these conversations, even though they don't really, many of my friends. They don't really take me seriously still, even after having the success with Relay, etc. And they do get into Bitcoin slowly but steadily, but they still look at it as like a speculation and, oh, now it's too late to get in. And when it goes down, like, oh, maybe should I buy now? But then I need to get rid of it quickly. It's a speculation for them. It's fun to read about it. And most of them don't really take the necessary hours to really understand how profound it is. And I just keep on talking about it. And then I think they are making their steps towards really understanding it. And at one point they will adopt it. But at this point, even in Switzerland, which is pretty progressive in that regard, we are at 15 to maybe 20% of the people that have actually accessed Bitcoin already or have invested in Bitcoin or at one point owned Bitcoin or still own Bitcoin. It's quite high. I think in Germany and most other European countries, like 10%. And in the world, it's more like 5-6%. So the adoption rate is really low still on a grand scale.
Yeah.
But and then especially here in Switzerland, as you said, people are like, oh, I mean, money just works. Why do we need another money? We already have digital money. We already have credit cards. I can buy stuff online with Twint, for example. Twint in Switzerland is basically like the Cash App or the Venmo in the US. So a very cool payment app. It works great, nice fintech, you know. So they're like, yeah, what's wrong? And it is important to tell them and help them understand in maybe very quick and easy to process pieces of information what is wrong. Because it's true, like there needs to be a problem. I mean, we're entrepreneurs, right? There needs to be a problem. In order for a solution to make sense. If there's no problem, then let's not try to, you know, find a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. Let's focus our time on something else. But I do think there are, basic things, basic problems in the financial system, how it works now in fiat money, that I think our generation should not just, you know, accept. They should at least look for alternatives and in the end just check both and adopt and use whatever they like more. I, for my part, definitely like Bitcoin more than our current financial system. So what is wrong with current fiat money? I think it's just too centrally controlled. So you cannot do anything with money, basically, at least not online, without having to fully trust the central banks that are just, you know, printing, expanding money as they wish, and banks that hold your money and help you transfer your money. You cannot transfer money digitally at all without asking your bank's permission. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not decentralized, it's not permissionless, and that's what I really like, for example, about Bitcoin. It gives you this freedom of controlling your money yourself in a self-custodial way and sending it in a decentralized, censorship-resistant, peer-to-peer way, very efficiently, globally, for low cost and quick and fast, in low time, basically, which I really like. So I like this kind of aspect of it. And what I like most as well is it does is independent from politics and from central banks that can just print it away. So the value is stable and even increasing on the long run because it really it's really similar to gold in all the great characteristics of gold that has made gold the dominant store of value in the last 1,000 years. But so it has all the benefits, but it doesn't have the downsides of gold, whereas mainly the scarcity that it cannot just be printed or produced like fiat money. So in the long run, this leads to Bitcoin being volatile, maybe in the short run, but going up in value in the long run. So it makes it a very good store of value and an asset that keeps your purchasing power in the long run. Whereas fiat is the opposite. It's in the short run, in short term, it's quite stable. That's why also, for example, Swiss people, they like it. But even in Switzerland and mostly also in other countries, in the long run, the value goes down, which is safe because there is always inflation. And even if inflation is like in Switzerland around 1 to 2%, still in 10 years, it will be worth much less. You will not be able to, if you are trying to save for a house now, it will take you 10 years to get the down payment for a house now. Well, this money that you will have saved for the next 10 years, it will not be able to buy you the same house in 10 years. And even worse in other countries, like for example, Turkey, of course, there it takes a year to basically cut your purchasing power in half when it comes to fiat money. But these are the main points I try to bring up, where people in like, especially in our generation as well, in like their daily business, and like every day they focus on other stuff, right?
Yeah.
They don't really see it because they say, yeah, look, it works. I can hold my money. I can transfer my money. The value is roughly the same from one day to another. So it's fine. What's the problem? But then when you zoom out a bit and you look at things in a 10, 20, 30 year time frame, then they start understanding the problem. And that's where they are becoming more and more open to alternatives like Bitcoin.
Yeah. Hey there, thanks so much for listening to this episode. I just really want to ask you for a quick favor. Over the last few months, I've seen that only 75% of people who listen to this podcast or watch it on YouTube are actually subscribed. The most important thing I'm currently focusing on, next to hopefully giving you interesting conversations, is growing this podcast subscriber base so I can continue with it into the future. I want to thank everyone who has been viewing and listening to Bitcoin for Millennials, leaving comments here and sending me DMs. It's been super, super motivating. So thank you so much. So I really want to ask you to please hit the subscribe button on YouTube or follow me on your favorite podcasting app if you are enjoying this podcast. Thanks again for joining me on this journey. Now back to the conversation. Yeah, what I also really like is that the information is so readily available, right? I don't think we need like more... There's not necessarily a need for like more content that explains how Bitcoin, you know, functionally works, but it's more about, you know, because anyone can study that, anyone can find that on the internet, right? It's more about finding, you know, what are the threads that you can give to people that they can pull on to start, you know, researching this for themselves. So, you know, when we talk about the problem or like how is the money system that you are participating in? How is that actually constructed? And so I also think that, you know, especially our generation, I mean, this podcast is focused on that, you know, we are going to be the first generation who's going to move more into power and own more of the wealth, right? And there will be a displacement, I think, of wealth. Like there will be a certain group will stick with the old system and a certain group will move to that new system. But I also really am enthusiastic about Gen Z in some way. You know, like I think a lot of people shit on Gen Z, but I don't think it's fair because they understand like all these main characteristics of Bitcoin. Like they understand the entire digital aspect, the portability aspect, the fact that that it doesn't really make sense that, you know, or well, they are, how do you say, like they are familiar with like digital assets, like owning stuff and games and et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. But they also have access to all this information that for, you know, growing up, that for example, the boomers or Gen X obviously did not have, right? And so they have a chance, I think, to early in their life learn more about the financial system and what is money, but also even more than us, right? Even though we grew up with the internet, but like they just have more information. So I do have like faith in the fact that they understand that everything that's known is free on the internet already, and they don't have to trust, you know, whatever someone says to them. Like they can already search for the right information. So I'm also optimistic to see that generation follow us.
Definitely. And I mean, these are the like we had digital natives, like our parents were not digital natives, mm-hmm. but they still, they when they were maybe 20 or 30, they got in touch with the internet, right? And they adapted, of course, but also not everyone like fully adapted. Like there mm-hmm. are still 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds now that don't really want to do stuff over e-banking, that are not really into social media, etc. You know, still not all of them have adapted. And then, but the next generation, our generation, now we're fully digital native. We grew up with it. For us, it's clear. Like, it's not even a question whether or not the internet is a good thing, or whether it's going to come or not, or it's going to go away. No, it's the internet is like part of our global infrastructure. It's just clear. And same probably happens now with our generation. Some of us are embracing Bitcoin and AI and like all these big trends. Some say, oh, it's just a fad, it's going to go away, and there's this kind of fight. Whereas the next generation, Gen X, or even the Gen, what is it, next?
Gen Z. Yeah, then after, I mean, Gen Z, I don't even Gen know Z what they call it.
Gen Next, I think. Really? This is just the next generation. They will grow up with it. There will be no question. Like, Bitcoin is just, Bitcoin is here. It's part of the global infrastructure. Like, of course, if I have some spare money, I will put it in Bitcoin. It's not going to be a question. Almost. Yeah. So that's also what makes me feel very excited about the future, is that there's no way Bitcoin can go away anymore now that it has passed this point where, you know, it will be accepted by future generations, because it is here. BlackRock is into it. Big companies are into it. Countries are into it. So many people are into it. Experts, like thought leaders, are into it. And it's just because they are digital native, of course, and they are aware of digital assets, etc. And because it's so big and the network effect is so high, it's just clear. It's not going to go away. Maybe these current generations are still, you know, they still struggling with it, especially the older people, like CEOs from JP Morgan and Vanguard, etc. Sometimes they're still struggling with it, but the CEOs of these companies in 10, 20, 30 years from now, of course they will not struggle with it. Of course they will embrace it.
Yeah. I agree. I also say this a lot to people, like, you know what your signal should be if, like, you know, veterans of Wall Street with 30 to 40 years of experience, like, do a 180 and go all into Bitcoin. Like, that should be your signal. Do you know how hard it is to, you know, recognize that you got wealthy off a broken money system, and then you found a solution to that, and then you actually, you know, overcame the ego challenge and went into that direction? Like, that is for me the purest signal, right? So and there's not a lot, but I think the ones that do get it and talk about it, I think their voice is really powerful. So, you know, like people like Lawrence Lepard or Bob Burnett, or I can't come up with his name, like these classic, like Druckenmiller, Paul Tudor Jones, like all these Wall Street legends that just say, you know, this is the best thing I've ever seen, basically. You know, then I think, like, I am 35, like that is like his entire career of experience. And so you know, you do see those people also in the boomer generation, but it's interesting to see, like, how it permeates, you know, between digital natives and the boomers. So yeah, we'll see where it goes, but I think it's fun to also talk about, you know, again, like, I think anyone can find information about how it works, but like for this podcast, what I love also to talk about is, like, how did you discover Bitcoin, but also how did you come to understand money? So who or what has been, like, most influential in shaping your views about, like, money, risk, wealth? Like, how did you learn about this?
Well, I didn't grow up in a family that cared too much about money at all. So, and also the school system, the education system here in Switzerland, even though Switzerland is this financial hub, etc., and known around the world for this, and there are a lot of banks and private banks, and there's a lot of gold, and it's a bit one of the best currencies, etc. Despite all that, like, I have learned zero about finances until I was like 20. Like, zero. My mom was is still a pharmacist. My dad was or is a language teacher and artist. So money was always, there was enough money. There was never a lot of money, but it was never a topic. It's never a topic. Like, to educate your kids about money is just still now, it's not a topic. So then when I started studying, And I chose psychology because I, you know, like people, and I at that time thought I wanted to work with people, and one good avenue would be to study psychology. I had to choose a minor. So 2/3 of my studies, the major was psychology, but then I had to choose a minor. I was like, okay, maybe something good would be business. It seems quite easy to learn, and kind of everyone is doing it, and it seems to be applicable to the world. If you are looking for a job, it makes your life easier. So I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's try business administration. And I started liking it. And there, that was when I started to learn about finances and the corporate finance courses and in the accounting courses, and then obviously in the economic courses. They were cool. But also, it doesn't really teach you about personal finance at all. That really just came out of my interest then, that I was reading more about investing and stocks and bonds and how to make more money, how to calculate return on investments, etc., and the risk reward that is always, you know, an important thing to consider, and what different asset classes are there. Okay, yeah. You can invest in stocks and bonds and different currencies and precious metals like gold and real estate and et cetera. And then you make a portfolio. And so I just learned a lot about this in personal research and YouTube videos and reading books and articles and talking to friends who are more into it, et cetera. And that's then also how I actually got into Bitcoin. There was one guy that didn't study with me, but he was we grew up together. We were very good friends, and he was more into tech usually. I was more into like business and finance and stuff like that. And so it was interesting that he actually came to me with Bitcoin, but from a tech perspective. So he thought that Bitcoin is just the coolest thing ever in terms of tech. That was 2015.
Yeah.
And he told me about it. I saw it. I didn't understand the tech like at all, nothing of it. But I thought it was super interesting from another perspective, just the financial aspect perspective. I was like, okay, this is something that looks like an asset, right? The price goes up and down 24/7 in seconds. So it looks like a stock, but it's not a stock. There's no company, there's no dividends, there's no cash flow. It's not a stock, it's not a company. But so then it looks like a currency, but there's no nation behind it or any like issuing group of the currency. So it can't also, and it's not accepted for payments. So now it's also not a currency. And it looks like gold, something like digital gold, like a digital commodity. And then that's when I realized, okay, it's probably closest to a digital commodity, and basically the framework that Michael Saylor is also offering to think about it. It's a digital property, digital commodity.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's all of this together somehow. And I still really haven't figured out what exactly it is. It just seems like the best way to store wealth and money for the future. And I just think the value is always going to go up and up and up, and the purchasing power will only increase because of all the characteristics. And I think it's in the end something that we haven't seen before. It's a mix of all these things just mentioned, much more probably. It's just a network to you, a protocol to use for storing and transferring value in time and space. Just fascinating. And that's when I was really hooked and learned more and more about it, and got into it first as a hobby, then more professionally. And now I think I would probably spend my whole life in this industry. It's so fascinating.
So do you, like, as you said, like you didn't understand it technically. I think nobody understands Bitcoin at the first impression, or the second, or the third, or the fourth, right? Like it's so, eventually you realize it's so big, and that is why it takes so much time to understand. But do you know, or can you remember, like what kind of like personal belief or, you know, arguments you had that made you like not get it? You know, like what I said before, I think it's interesting. Like a lot of people dismiss it in the beginning, or they're like, no, this can't be that what people say it is. You know, like do you remember that? But then also what like really made you like get it? I think I really got it after being like 5 years into this, or something, where I actually realized, okay, if we have an exchange of value, right, we shake hands on you doing something for me, and I give you, you give me value, I give you value in return, that basically represents energy, right? You expend energy, physical or mentally, and I have money, which is captured energy that represents that, and that is our exchange. And once I realized that we are storing our energy into future time and space in a system that's stealing that energy, at least at 2% a year, and in effect way more, if I can move that block of energy that I gathered into a system that protects that block of energy, then I was like, yeah, I should do that, right? It's being stolen from versus protecting yourself. And then I was like, okay, then I got into a rush. Basically, I was like, okay, I need to move. Like, do you have any of that you can recall?
Yeah, I think first why I dismissed it, or why I just couldn't believe it's going to work on the long run. From the beginning, I was hooked. I was fascinated, and I thought it was a great, at least experiment, or great innovation, a great idea. I just had trouble the first probably 2 or 3 years to really believe that it's going to work on the long run, because there is nothing behind it. And this is still a criticism like that a lot of boomers come up with, which like a lot of skeptics come up with. It's like, yeah, there's nothing behind it. We're always taught that there must be something behind something in order to work.
Yeah.
So, for example, even with gold, they say, oh yeah, but it's used in the industry and it's used for luxury goods, etc., jewelry, whatever, which is bullshit, because this only represents like 20% of the gold's market cap, and 80% is the monetary thing, where also nothing else but gold, which cannot eat, is behind it. So, but anyway, that's the criticism, or like behind fiat money there is the nation, this whole government and the whole economic power of this nation, right? There's something behind it, something to touch, something concrete. And this is what we are taught, right? The first 20 years of our lives. And so when I saw this, this would be super cool if it would work, but it only is based on a belief system that a community of people believe that it has value. And maybe because then also in 2015, this community was still globally very small. And so I thought, yeah, probably just a hype and it will go away because all of these people will move on to something else. They will stop believing in it, and then it will have almost zero value, or only a value for a very small community of believers that, you know, still go with it, but most of them will just move on to the next cool thing, and then, you know, it's not gonna become a global thing. That was my biggest worry. But then after 2 or 3 years, and especially after the big bull market in 2017 and this whole ICO craze, etc., and the big block war and all this drama, all this chaos, and Bitcoin was still there. And it was not only still there, it was much stronger, and the community was only growing, and new thought leaders, new experts, new companies came in, and more people came and stayed. On the long run, more and more content was produced about it, books are written about it, movies were released about it, etc. Less and less, I thought it was a worry that this thing is just going away and no one believes in it anymore. Because also the fundamentals, like it's not only a belief system, it's a good, people believe in it for a good reason.
Yes.
Because it is just the best money and store of value asset that human beings have ever invented. If you look at how money needs to look like in order to work, sound money and a sound store of value, then it has to be, you know, the scarcity is important, portability is important, divisibility is important. They're like these these seven traits that it needs to have. And Bitcoin just excels against any other commodity or any other asset by far. It's better than fiat money in these regards. It's better than gold and other precious metal in this regard. It's better than anything in this regard.
Isn't this also the thing that I really want to emphasize more? Like, I think the invitation to people listening or watching or, you know, whatever content they consume about Bitcoin, the invitation should be about you should study it. The whole point is that we don't have faith, or what did you say? We don't have faith, or we don't believe in this because someone else says it's going to be something. No, we believe in it because we can actually verify it. We can verify that how it's proposed to work, that it actually works like that. That is the entire point, right? The entire point is that you do not have to believe what someone else says. Please don't believe us, but then also go out there and try to verify for yourself that the money is broken, that Bitcoin works in a certain way, how that is a complete 180 as opposed to the money system that you currently participate in, right? Like you have to do the action. The action is not buy Bitcoin. The action is study Bitcoin and try to disprove us, because I would love to be disproven in my understanding and belief in what this could be, right? And so when people, yesterday I had some fun interactions again, where people say, oh, it's a cult or it's a religion or whatever. And I say, well, I actually believe in something that I can verify. Try that for any belief you have currently.
Mm.
It's because someone else said so.
Mm-hmm.
And you just adopted that thought because, you know, whatever reason. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can factually verify, right? Cryptographically, mm-hmm. even verify. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the only thing. And so it's a super rational, it's so rational that lots of people just cannot wrap their heads around it, right? Because also to your point, like your first thought about, oh, it cannot be this, what is behind this, like all these questions, you know, you're doubting and all these things. And this is also, I think, a symptom, like that nihilistic approach instead of optimistic approach, right? That is a symptom of the fiat money.
Yeah.
You know, this cannot be true. It's so profound, it cannot be true. It's so simple, it cannot be true. You know, why would it be true? I'm usually always abused, subconsciously in the system that I participate. Like, and, you know, and so I love that you said that, because that's what I see a lot. And I had the same, right? I mean, this is what has been created. And I think it's really freeing once you're aware of it, that all the other people that you are supposed to listen to are just other people. They are not smarter than you. They are like it's just other people trying to figure out their life as well, mm-hmm. right? And so when someone says something, it is up to you whether you listen to it or follow it or not, right? It's not. It's always your choice, but also always your fault if you do, right? And I think what is so contradictory in Bitcoin is that you can actually consciously decide, do I adopt this or not? And you can find all the information you need to also make that conscious decision. And with everything else in the world, especially fueled by fiat money system, that is just obscured. It's vague. It's very hard to really make an objective decision. And that's also why it's so hard to understand that could actually be possible, I think.
Yeah, and for decades now, even centuries, you just had to trust. You just had to trust these leaders, right? When it comes to money, or these institutions, maybe better, the institutions, these leaders, these small committees, like the central bank and the bank where you hold your money, you had to always trust them. And so it's clear that this is a very hard switch to do from thinking, okay, money, what makes money valuable is the trust that we put into the institution that that manages it. To know the trust comes from the verifiable, you know, foundations, principles of the protocol, that it works as supposed, that it is well designed, and it has these mathematical and cryptographical and game theoretical, principles that just work together. But this is very hard to trust something invisible, intouchable, and it's much easier to trust a group of people. And especially because we were wired like this for generations and generations and generations, even though these people also sooner or later always are being corrupted. So they're not trustable at all. For example, we always would trust if we have, fiat money that this is backed by gold. Well, not anymore since the 70s. And we just still now trust that they don't print too much, which they do. They hyperinflate a lot of currencies, but there was no other alternative. We just had to trust these people. Mm-hmm. We just had to hope in the good character of these people or the good faith of these people for us. There was no choice. Now there is a choice, but it's very hard to rewire our brains, right? And this will maybe take generations. And it's only a few people who are very open, I think, to innovations and to new paradigms, and that are questioning a lot, that are questioning things like religion or our governments or institutions or things like fiat money or nation states or whatever, like these very basic things that we grew up with. There is a small handful of people who are questioning these things, and I think these are the same people that are now starting to adopt Bitcoin. For the rest, it might take decades or even generations to catch up.
Yeah, and of course it's also really hard, because once you realize this, you also realize, oh wow, I really have to take care of myself. You know, like once you realize that, you outsourced responsibility over your life, then once you take that responsibility, it is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is one of the biggest things people need to integrate, and it takes a long time, and it's not something that is fun to do, right? Like it's easier to just stay where you are, and that's I don't think a lot of people like the comparison to like Matrix movie, but it is that. Like once you know and you have the choice, then life becomes pretty hard, actually, in the choice stage, right?
Yeah.
But still, I believe, like, you know, if you take the blue pill, like in the Matrix, and you stay in the Matrix, you want to still eat the steak, right, from the movie, like, I still want to eat steak. Eventually, that will hit you, I because you know that there's an alternative choice, right? You can be subconsciously just active in the blue pill type world, but then nothing bothers you. But once you know that there's another thing that you can actually choose, then it will bother you if you ignore that eventually, I think. And then maybe that's also why sometimes people are such harsh critics, right? Like sometimes I get replies on Twitter where I think like, wow, like really? Did my thought trigger you? Wow, okay, that's fascinating, right? Like, I don't know, like that. I think that's it, you know, that is just hard. And that's also why we have to, you know, I think share also our own stories, because maybe, you know, even if we now reach like one person who now starts thinking about that, right? I think that would be awesome already if we could achieve that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think people will, on their own, they will find their path. Some not. So some will always be skeptic and passive about it. That's fine. But more and more people, especially also in the coming like younger generations, more and more of them will do the hard work. And it is hard work. There's some homework to do. On first, you need to understand the problem, then you need to understand the solution, Bitcoin, and then you need to understand how to really hold it, how does it make sense to buy it. It's not trading, it's not like, it's not even investing, it's more like saving. So yes, you should do regular investment, like dollar cost averaging. You should not freak out when the price dips 20-30%. It's just, you know, it's just a short-term volatility. You need to zoom out and look at it on a long-term perspective. How do you hold it, especially once you have quite some funds? Then don't use a custody solution, because there's a centralization and the counterparty risk. You need to take it under your control. You manage your private key, and then how to do this, you know, set up a hardware wallet, etc. This is
a lot of stuff. Yes,
this responsibility is a lot. I mean, there's a lot of homework to do that you don't really need to do today. If you just go to work and you get some fiat money in your bank account, you can spend it with your credit card and it's fine.
Yeah,
but this is all things you. But as you said before, I think it's worth to do this work, and just out of curiosity, and just because of the network effect, and more people adopting and talking about it to other people, and it's more in the media, and it's just the benefits are spread, distributed to more and more people by also influential people like Larry Fink now, etc., and all these big newspapers, Bloomberg, Financial Times, that are also always, you know, writing about it on a regular basis. It will come naturally that more and more people take the orange pill, even though it's a bit hard. And then that's how we will end up with a dominant new financial system. But it takes time. Again, it will take decades or even generations for the majority of the people to catch up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what is like the main misunderstanding about Bitcoin that you would wish to debunk if you had the chance? Like, what's the most common thing you hear that you think, you know, people should understand is not true?
That's a good point. I think it's still the energy consumption is still a very big thing that people use, people who don't understand how, because also it sounds scary at the beginning, like how much energy Bitcoin uses. And people just don't know that most of the energy that it uses is basically coming from sustainable sources. And the way how Bitcoin mining works is that they don't take away energy from like others. Like, not, it's not that because Bitcoin uses a lot of energy, is that all the people in your country now pay more for their electricity bills. Yeah. Because, you know, you can be, as a miner, you can be somewhere else, you can be whatever you want, where there is excess and cheap energy. You actually want to be where there is cheap energy that is not otherwise being used, because then your model becomes more economically and financially, you know, viable. And that actually there are studies that show that already today 70-80% of the energy usage from Bitcoin miners are coming from sustainable sources, and that the trend is positive. So in the next 10 years, we actually even assume that there will be 90% or more. And so that it is not an environmental threat, that there are even ways to think about how it will lead to a more sustainable future, because the energy use, like flaring, for example, can be reduced, etc. And that this is all not happening by coincidence, but by design. Mm-hmm. This has been designed like this from the beginning. It has been thought through. It's a really systematic, the design choices that have been made is so that it will be, from an energy consumption and sustainability point of view, very positive for the world. And it's actually also, when you compare it to other financial systems like gold or physical fiat money or digital fiat money like the banking system, it is superior. It's using less energy, and it uses much more sustainable energy. So I think this whole energy topic is being debunked very well. There are great pieces of content out there, like Lynn Alden's article, for example, is just wow about it. But also there are many studies, this Oxford study, for example, or many other studies that actually and articles that debunk it. But the problem is just still people don't go that deep. They just see or hear somewhere that how much energy Bitcoin is using, and they also thinking that how can it scale, like how can Bitcoin become 10x or 100x from now and scale to the whole world, and then it will use 10x or 100x more energy. They don't understand that that's not how it works. It's not like the more transactions, the more energy is being used. But it's just it's just a problem of understanding. But the same you have in different other industries, like electric cars, for example. There's still a lot of people that say, you know, electric cars with their lithium batteries and etc. in the end are worse for the environment and not better. there will always be these debates. I think that's why this is hard. This is never going to be 100% debunked, or it at least will take a very long time. That's, I think, that's why it is still one of the biggest problems of, yeah, the Bitcoin community.
I think people got taught in some way that using energy is bad, where, you know, if you're listening or watching this, look around you in wherever you are, like everything you see, from the trees to, I see the books to my, you know, glasses here, or, you know, the wood on the floor, everything outside the buildings, like everything takes energy to create or maintain. So the usage of energy is not the argument. It's about where does it come from? And I think you make a great point about, you know, the entire incentive for the business model of miners is that you find the cheapest energy, and cheapest energy is energy that is created but not used, right? So it's excess energy, or it's wasted energy, or it's actually capturing energy in places where it is not captured already. So also wasted, right? If there's a great company called Gridless who goes to African villages who live like on the edge of a waterfall, which is basically also wasted energy, right? That hydro energy there. And so they capture that energy and they give energy to the village so the people can cook and store their food and all these things. And that is the entire incentive around the business model. And so I agree. Again, this is kind of like this nihilistic thing, like, oh, I think energy usage is bad. Energy usage should go down, right? I think that's what people think. But yeah, interesting. Good
Again,
point.
That's what we are taught. And we always try to use our old frameworks to evaluate this new thing. Yeah. And if it doesn't work, then we think, okay, it's not gonna happen. But yeah, then I'm also wondering, like, how are these people looking at something that has been so successful in the last 15 years, and it is so huge now? Like, there's more than, the market cap of Bitcoin is much more than a billion dollars.
Trillion.
Sorry, I always, because in Switzerland, in like,
yeah,
in
yeah, Germany, I know. Same yeah, here.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's much more than 1 trillion. It's huge. And yeah, they still.
So it's
think,
not nothing, right?
It's not nothing. And they still think, like, as an ordinary person, they still think, okay, I know something that all of these people don't know, and I know it's going to crash, like, because it uses so much energy. Yeah. That's something I don't understand.
Yeah. But exactly, like, you know, I think you got this from Jeff Booth as well, right? Like, he's an investor in your company, so you know him well. It's so interesting, right? If you look at a new system from an old system and then just decide to not, that it's not going to work. What I find interesting is that underlying, you agree that the system from which you are looking actually works fine. It has no flaws, right? Because if you use that as the framework, you know, or the glasses you put on to look at, you know, something new, then you assume that it's perfect. That's why you dismiss something else, right? Because if you understood the imperfections of, you know, your current system, then you would also be open to see, like, oh, what could this new system do to solve those imperfections, right? So I think that ties back to, you know, people not understanding that there is a problem.
And I mean, for many people, to be fair, it does work somehow. Like, and these are usually the ones that exactly are the biggest critics of the new system, because, hey, the old system works very well for me. If I'm a Swiss banker that works at UBS, I have some middle management position in the UBS. I don't really have to work that much.
No.
But I earn shit tons of fiat money. That is inflating only at a low rate in Switzerland, and that I can invest in stocks that usually beat inflation on an average yearly basis, at least if I hold them for more than maybe 5 years or more. Then, you know, and then I have credit cards that are quite cheap and easy to use everywhere in the world, and you know, everything's perfect. Why would I even be open to a new system. And these are also the people usually, they don't travel too much, you know, they're just happy. They can also afford a house and a car. They maybe travel a little bit, but never in countries where, you know, where there's definitely other situations and conditions, living conditions, etc. And they also don't see that they are in a very small bubble. You know, Switzerland, for example, is one of the richest countries in the world. So even if you are at the lower end, you're still very much okay. Things yeah. still work for you, and you don't see the problems that actually more than half of the people in the world have, and how Bitcoin could also be a solution for them. So yeah, only if you're really open and questioning things, you can come from such a privileged position and understand Bitcoin. Otherwise, it will come more from other countries that are struggling more.
Yeah. So let's talk about your company, Relay. Can you tell me about it and also how you decided to start a company in the Bitcoin space? You said, I'm going to dedicate my, you know, my life to Bitcoin. I think I have the same. I didn't start a company yet in it, but you did. What? How did that start? And like, what do you do? How is it going?
I first started with a fascination and a passion. As I said before, in 2015, I kind of learned about Bitcoin, and then the subsequent 2-3 years, I really delved into it and really understand the profound development that it will have, and that how great it is. And so first started with this passion, and then second with an idea that I had, or an opportunity I saw in the market. So I saw that, okay, more and more people are interested in this topic, Bitcoin. They want to buy some Bitcoin, usually small amounts. And then once they have understood, usually they want to buy also regular amounts, like weekly or monthly. But it should be super easy, because most of them just are, you know, they are not tech or finance geeks. They just want to have something that is, you know, works on their phone with a couple of clicks, takes a couple of minutes. They don't like to upload documents somewhere. They don't like to look at charts or use stop loss or market orders or limit orders, whatever. You know, they are not traders. They just want to have a quick and dirty, simple, user-friendly and nicely designed solution on their phone where they can buy Bitcoin, if necessary, sell Bitcoin, set up a savings plan, and then send and receive and hold their Bitcoin on their own, all in one place. And so that's how I had this idea, or saw this opportunity. And then I started to look for co-founders and other people that are supporting me, like investors. And because I was still very young, I was broke, I didn't really have the traits of a perfect like startup entrepreneur at all. I was also not a technical, I didn't come from technology, I didn't study computer science or anything else. I didn't understand shit. You know, I didn't understand anything about tech or entrepreneurship or any of these important things, like fundraising or something. I didn't know shit about legal compliance, etc. This is all the things that I am learning on the way. But yeah, I think I had this passion and an idea and saw an opportunity. And yeah, and then more and more people started kind of following my mission and helping me to bring this vision into reality. And that's then how we ended up managing to release a first version in the app stores of this app that we envisioned. This was in summer 2020. So soon we will be 4 years old, or at least 4 years on the market. And yeah, it was a wild ride. A lot of ups and downs. But if you look at it from a bit of an outside perspective now and zoom out, these 4 years look like a pretty nice growth journey, and I'm still really excited about it.
Awesome, man. Can you share a bit perhaps about like what you see with regards to, you know, you're focused on Europe, of course, like what is the adoption like in Europe, or what are like the trends you are seeing with regards to who is buying Bitcoin and how that is going?
I think still very early. So again, probably depending on the country in Europe, between 10 and max 20%, but more on the 10% range of adoption rate. People that really have Bitcoin, many of them also still have it as like speculation, and you know, they just buy to maybe sell it at a later point to make more fiat. So it's really, really believers and like people that are committed and passionate about Bitcoin. It's only a very small percentage amount, I think. We see that mostly millennials are buying Bitcoin and understanding and therefore buying Bitcoin. So around half of our users are actually millennials between 20 and 35-ish. Also younger, even younger ones. And then the older, the less. Also, most of them are male. So unfortunately, I think only like 15% of our customers are women. 85% are men. So young men basically is the dominant demographic. This probably has to do with, you know, we are a fintech in the end. Our Bitcoin can be also probably categorized as fintech, and finance, both finance and technology are known as being male dominant fields. And so this is the intersection of these two. So obviously there's not a lot of women, unfortunately, but I hope this trend will go into the other direction a little bit as well. Yeah, that's kind of what I see from a regulatory point of view. There are quite some developments. It is becoming more regulated. This has pros and cons. There's this MiCA regulation that is now basically unifying the EU's approach, where most of the European countries are in this EU, the European Union. This is unified now, so there's a legal and compliance framework for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. It's quite restrictive. That's maybe on the con side. So it's harder to do business. It's more expensive to do business. And it's also less easy to use for people, the services. Some of them will struggle a lot. Some companies will struggle a lot. It also depends on how you're designed, like custodial, non-custodial, Bitcoin only versus other cryptos, etc. But even if you make the right design choices, it's going to make our life harder. But on the other hand, it also helps to give legitimacy and credibility to this new technology, to Bitcoin, and more people will start trusting and therefore investing in it if it is regulated, especially also institutions, companies, big funds, hedge funds, whatever. This is kind of what maybe I see in a nutshell in Europe. In general, it is going into the right direction with a lot of up and downs, but I think we will see much more adoption in the next 5 years in Europe. That's for sure.
Yeah. So how do you see the future of Bitcoin in, well, Switzerland or broader EU with like all this regulation that, you know, is introduced by all these pure technocrats? It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting to see, like, or the, you know, there are some ideas about things they want to introduce about banning proof of work, which is based on, you know, all these flawed energy arguments. So like, how do you see the future? What do you think about it?
I think there will be more regulation. That's clear. There will be always more regulation with such a financial innovation like that. Therefore, there will be less companies. Unfortunately, there will be less innovation, unfortunately. So the window for new companies is a bit closing. I mean, there will be new ones, but less, because it's going to be harder as a new early stage company with not a lot of track record, not a lot of human and financial resources. It will be hard to enter this because of the regulation. That's one. So less new entrants, and then also less of the existing ones, because the small ones, the bootstrapped ones, they will have a very hard time to comply with all these regulatory requirements, etc., because it's so difficult, so expensive, and so it's a lot of effort. So there will be less in, like, let's say in 5 years, there will be less companies in the space, unfortunately. And the bigger ones will get even bigger, because they will get more of the market share that the smaller ones now cannot capture anymore. And the bigger, like, economies of scale, right? So it's for the bigger companies, actually, regulatory scrutiny is always good, because they can afford it. Like Coinbase, they have billions of dollars on their balance sheet and getting billions of revenue and profit. So they can afford, I think they invest like 5% or 10% of their capital into regulatory, legal compliance issues, even lobbying, etc. So for them, it's good. They can afford it, but the small ones can't. So the bigger ones will get bigger. There will be a smaller amount of different companies that will all comply. But then on the other side as well, I think there will be like a counter movement to this, which is also interesting to see. Like, for example, peer-to-peer exchanges. There will be more of these because also more and more people will maybe dislike this whole regulatory development and start looking for alternatives and maybe will use something else, not something like Coinbase, which is super highly regulated, but more something like on the other side, maybe even BISC or HODL, which is on the unregulated side as much as possible, or something like Relay, where we're a bit in between. We will be more and more regulated, of course, unfortunately, as a centralized, not peer-to-peer player, but still we are more on the other side of the spectrum because we are Bitcoin only, non-custodial, and regulated in Switzerland, which is outside of the EU, so we do get some, still some perks when it comes to that, but still many of the limitations that come with the new EU regulations we will also need to adhere to. It's definitely going to be interesting. These are a bit the developments I see, but in the end, from a user perspective, if you're a normal like retail investor and you just want to adopt Bitcoin, there's not a lot that will change. You will always be able to get into Bitcoin in different ways. Either you, on the one side, you can be super, super regulated, and then you end up with something like an ETF, or then you can go down the spectrum and use something like a bank to buy Bitcoin. More and more banks will, through this regulation, get into Bitcoin, which is also good. You still have Bitcoin, it's just custodied and highly regulated by a bank, but you still have Bitcoin, which is cool. Then you can use an exchange, which is also regulated, but then also the risk is a bit higher, still custodial, but you can still do it. Maybe the user experience is a bit better. I mean, the simplicity of it. Then you can use something like Relay, which is a regulated broker, but still gives you self-custody, which is cool. And then on the lower side, you can still use peer-to-peer exchanges like BISC, HODL, etc. And I think all of these will be used more and more. And then really depends on your choice on how regulated and how KYC heavy and how custodial you want to go. But yeah, I think in the end, it is good and is inevitable, this whole regulation. So it's just about the companies need to navigate it and the users as well. But in the end, there will be more and more competition and therefore also better offerings for using more different offerings for users to access Bitcoin, which in the end is, as everything, great for Bitcoin.
Yeah. All right. So what advice would you give to a millennial just starting to explore Bitcoin? What would be like the main thing?
First, educate yourself about it before you really like start jumping into it. I think that's a big mistake that many people are doing is, oh, the price went up, I don't have a lot of time, I just buy a little bit, and then they don't understand anything of it, and then when the price goes down they sell again. And the longer you do this you end up with always buying when it's high, because that's when you read about it in the newspapers, and then sell when it's low, because then is also when you read about it in the newspaper you think, oh fuck, now it's all gonna crash. And because you don't understand, because you don't have this long-term conviction in it, you will sell. And so in the end, you will just lose money. That's why important that first you educate yourself about it. You see it in a very long time horizon. As Warren Buffett said, don't buy anything that you would not hold for 10 years. Then rather don't even hold it for 10 minutes. So you need to get this conviction and this commitment that, I want to hold Bitcoin for 10 years. And then I would advice, obviously it's not financial advice, but what works best, I think, for the most people is just set up a savings plan, you know, dollar cost average. You have your set amount of fiat money per week or per month that you want to save and you don't have to touch in the next couple of years. And then you put this into Bitcoin, and also you learn how to store this Bitcoin safely, ideally with yourself, without any counterparty risk, etc., self-custodial. And then the longer you will do this, the more happier you will be. Because if you do it at least 4 years, then at least historically, no one has ever made a loss. And you will understand it more and more, so probably your conviction will grow, and then you will just do very well.
Awesome, man. That's good advice. So last question, and I ask everyone the same question. What is a core belief that you will never let go?
That's a very good question. My core belief is that human beings are curious and open and productive and entrepreneurial. So they will always find solution to every problem. And that's also what excites me about Bitcoin, is this community that is coming together to create a better world in fixing the financial system, or creating an alternative, a new financial system. And I think you can look back tens of thousands of years of human history, and basically what we were always good at, what is basically in our DNA, is we always solve all the problems that are coming. We always keep making better things. We keep enhancing our living standards. So that's also making me look into the future. The future looks very promising to me. A lot of people are like kind of have quite a negative view on the future now, because a lot of things are going wrong. I see that we have a lot of problems, but every generation usually thinks, oh, now we're fucked, like this was it. I think every generation has that. My core belief is that in the end, it's a very optimistic one, that in the end we will together solve all these problems and create a better future for our next generation.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for this conversation. I really enjoyed it. And if I'm ever around where you are in Switzerland, I'll definitely come by. And let's stay in touch.
Hell yeah, we will. Thank you so much for everything you do. I really love your podcast and your X or Twitter engagement. So keep up the great work and spreading the word. And talk soon. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would be amazing if you could rate, review, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. It will help us educate more millennials on the importance of Bitcoin. You can follow and connect with me on Twitter. I'm Bramk, that's @BRAMK. And if you are or know someone who has an interesting perspective on Bitcoin that's worth sharing, hit me up. I read and reply to every single message. I appreciate your support and hope you'll be here for the next episode. Thanks for listening.